434-1719. It was not just about a week ago that I had a fairly long conversation with an entertainer on one of the ships, and I asked him specifically about suicide because it was raised by a Trinidadian entertainer, and he said he knew the entertainer, and he talked about ships in other ports, and now it has visited our port. The fallout from this coronavirus will be with us for a while. Even if vaccines are found, businesses reopened, trading continues, cruises start back, flights, the people who have lived through this pandemic, those who have lost, those who, whether it's the lives of loved ones or their businesses, it's going to remain with us for a while. My condolences to the family, friends, those who may have worked, those who have perhaps interacted with the folks out on the ships. Look into the eyes and see that they're human. Brass Tacks, good afternoon. Brass Tacks, good afternoon. 434-1719, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, sir.
I want to just ask a question. I may say, make a statement here. Mm-hmm. I noticed that in this morning on your program, a lady spoke about the integrity legislation, which was mooted by a party some 10 years ago, and nothing happened. And in 2 years, it is all worked. She's all worked up about 2 years for it not coming on the books yet. So I don't want to look at these things and ask yourself a question. There was no talk at the end of the last session of Parliament about the integrity legislation. And why now? Let me move on. I would suggest that I know you made some mentions about an article which appeared in the papers about the Minister of Education. But sometimes it might be good to listen to the entire context of the speech in the House Assembly yesterday. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes the paper really brings things that, although they bring segments of it, you don't really have the benefit of the entire speech, and therefore the context may be a little warped when only a portion of that speech is brought to the papers.
Which is why I said the piece that I read, in quotation marks, alarm me. And there's a reason why I said alarm me. Let me say this, sir. I said it a lot during the last administration, and I hope I ain't gonna say it a lot during this administration too. If I expect nothing of you, whatever you do ain't gonna bother me, you know.
That's right.
The only time I would ask you, brethren, what is you doing, is when I have high expectations of you. Right? That's something I think people don't get. But anyhow.
You're right.
I know that, sir. I know the way I put over things. I know that very well.
Some
yes, sir.
People write what they want to write, and not what is what you know. And that's something one has to watch.
Yeah, you know.
The other thing is that the brother Mohammed Nasser
mm-hmm.
Is making a daily call for the black people in this country to come together. And he's saying today that the Indians do what they have to do and do it successfully.
Mm-hmm.
Indian population, or the Asian population in Barbados is 1%. The white people population in Barbados is 4.something%. And the Barbadian population is 94-something, black people, is about 94-something%. I think those numbers are significant. And it is all right to get on the news, on the call-in program, and every day talk about how black people should do this and how black people should do that and black people should do the next. But you need to be the catalyst. Yes, you sung your word on the program, which is very good, but it goes further than that, I believe. I believe that one has got to get up and mobilize some segment of the population that you're talking about to achieve the objective of what you want to achieve. Other than that, you're spinning top in mud. Yes, you sensitize the people, but you must go the extra step. step is, how do I bring, even in this COVID environment, they could go on Zoom, how do they bring the rank and file Barbadians who want to get into business or who want to join me on my crusade of bringing black people together, how do I get that to happen? How do I mobilize them? And that is what has to happen. You cannot come every day on the program and talk about black people this, black people that, black people this, black people that, and don't go the extra step. Sometimes you have to go the extra step to show that you really are putting some thought and some action to your thoughts. I rest my case for today.
Okay, so he did say he was going to get a truck and go around the island spreading his message. I think I heard him say that on Sunday. But I'll tell you, huh? Sometimes it's not a message, you know. It's the messenger we listen to, or don't listen to, as the case may be. So we'll see what happens. Brass Dex, good afternoon. Hello, good afternoon. 4341790. Brass Dex, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Johnson.
Good afternoon, sir.
A pleasant day to you.
To you too, sir.
Actually, I'm going to be on the same line of your last caller, but I want to talk back to yesterday's conversation with Mr. Lashley in relation to the Civic and in relation to the establishment of the credit unions in Barbados. Mr. Lashley was on par. But there was only one point of the early stages that was not mentioned, and that was the part of the SUSU and the early lodge, the various lodges that were held in the various parishes across Barbados, and who represented, each of those lodges represent a significant undertaker. I believe you're old age, you remember this. The fact remains that across the country, there were several lodges and they, what we call a lodge house, who collected at least probably an average of 3 cents per week, and that money went all the way down. So the start of it was a body of people who initiated this, who in truth and fact, Mr. Johnson, who was diminished in the latter stages of the history of Barbados, and that was the people of the landship, the people of the.
I don't community. People have any idea what that organization was about, sir.
I don't think so, Mr.
Oh, okay. I just wondered because you know, I mean, the landship is about as Barbadian as the rock at Bashaba. That's in almost every photograph of Barbados, and you know, I don't think people have any idea what the landship is about, but you know.
Uh-huh. But I like this because when I talk to you, I either make a mistake or being corrected for it. That's what I like. And I say that the landship stood out in the early days of Barbados in the sense that it was an organization that was organized, even though, you know, apart from several things, the landship was truly organized. And they had what we consider ways and means of direction, savings, weddings, funeral duties and that type of thing. So we saw the movement, and eventually they ended up moving a lot of the resources down to the Civic in Swan Street. Eventually we saw the transformation of it. Mr. Johnson, my life tells me that there was a time in this country when black businesses was the majority. And black businesses are stood out. Because when you look at Treeside Road, don't exist the way it should look. When you look at Roebuck Street, don't exist the way it should look. When you look at Nelson Street, Baxter's Road, Tudor Street, and I could go on and name several of those areas where the franchise of business in those streets was residents and living. But eventually, I think what transpired, and I'm talking between the period of 1947 all the way back to 1967 and on, I think the problem that existed and created the situation there was that there were savers. The black franchise in Barbados were people who saved their money and kept the money in several forms. They either kept the money by way of hiding under the pillars, they either kept the money by way of burying it on the outside, they either kept the money in some form or another. But one of the major things that the black franchise of Barbados made sure that they were well aware for was death duties. They saved money for death duties. as far as Barbados was concerned. My transition to this situation, I want people to understand that we are no blaming others, but we got to blame ourselves. Because when you look at what has just established, that the franchise of Barbados back between the 47 and back to the 67 was predominantly black business people, ordinary black business people who educated their children in some form or another. But then we saw the establishment of the growth of banks in Barbados. Various commercial banks came to Barbados, and as a result of that, they offered loans. They offered loans. The lodges in those places could not have offered loans. But they offered loans. And a lot of the black businesses of the day grab at these loans, loans that impossible loans. And they went after these loans and found themselves in a very critical position.
Why they went after it?
Because they went after loans, because like everything else, Mr. Johnson, it was a matter of seeing an improvement in living,
right?
Seeing an improvement in building,
mm-hmm.
and the possibility of educating their children.
And then what happened?
Then what happened was that some of them were impossible loans. There were some impossible loans, and eventually you had a situation where a lot of these businesses came tumbling down one after the other.
Let me ask you this question, Zoo. Today in Barbados, right? If you drive around, walk around Barbados, you go into malls up and down Broad Street, the same streets you mentioned, Baxter's Road, you go Nelson Street, you go up the South Coast, and you look at the businesses in the various places. If you did a check, how many of them you think would be owned by whites, blacks, persons of other races, Indians, Portuguese.
Estimation,
you ever checked it?
In my estimation of answering that question for you,
mm-hmm.
I would have to go on and name several areas across Barbados where black businesses were predominant.
Mm-hmm. And, where black and you don't think they are today?
Huh?
You don't think they are today?
The reason for this, Mr. Johnson, is that a lot of the black businesses found themselves, as far as loans were concerned, in the wrong direction.
So I hear you say that, but the question I'm asking is this. Okay, so you had a Leacock and Company Limited that no longer exists, but his sons had Trident Insurance, they had other businesses. You have somebody like Everson R. Elcock. His sons went into other business. You have Exclusive Lighting. You're still part of the family. There are businesses that exist. They have different names, but they're still owned by certain black business people. And I'm asking you, apart from the ones that failed because they went and took loans that they could not upkeep and their businesses fell, over the years, today, have we seen the emergence of a different type of business person, a different type, the word we keep using these days, entrepreneur, who has a business that is not brick and mortar with an awning at the front and sliding glass doors?
Let me go back to establish, sir, mm-hmm. that there was always Everson Elcock, mm-hmm. Lighting years mm-hmm. ago.
Yeah, I know.
Let me go back.
Which did I pick on that one?
Huh?
That's why I picked on that one.
There was always a Leacock Lighting years ago in the days of what I was talking about, and they operated from around the garrison. I'm trying to establish that there are several business people today who was in the transition period that I've been talking about of the 47 to 67, where black business people considered to be the franchise holders of the economic situation in Barbados. And some of those businesses are still established there, and they've gone from one family tree to another family tree. What I'm trying to establish, maybe right, maybe wrong, is that a lot of privileges were offered and people went after the privileges. That is, bank loans were offered. They were not capable of going after the credit unions because the credit unions only started to establish and fund themselves back in the 90s. So there was no way to borrow money from the credit unions. All the credit unions were saving shops. But we had a situation in this country where when you take certain bakeries in this country whose names still stand out, those names mm-hmm. were there long, long ago.
Mm-hmm.
My feeling about it is that we don't have to go too far. If this is a COVID situation, I'll tell you what I feel Barbados should look after. Mr. Johnson, one of the things that this country seems to, my colleagues seem to not to understand, is the importance of insurance and copyright. And I say that to say this, that insurance, many business people of yesteryear, black business people of yesteryear, bought insurance from black salesmen between the period of 50s and up to the 70s. And they bought lovely policies. Those were the days of insurance companies that manufactured life and life. They bought, so they made a provision for this day. But what is happening now? What is happening now? And I feel that a lot of the young people who are coming out of school and who are entrepreneurs, who are looking forward to be of Barbados tomorrow, do not seem to understand, because the black history was not taught the way it should have been taught. The position is that they need to understand to find intellectual property business, get themselves organized. They need to find out exactly where cost cap or copyright is established, because a lot of them are talking about online, a lot of them are talking about this and that. If we are supposed to take back what we lost, now is an opportunity for these young black entrepreneurs to do what their great-grandfathers would have done many years ago, but they have to do it different. They have to do it understanding that they've got to make themselves a prominent in tomorrow's world. Insurance is extremely important. Copyright is extremely important. Intellectual property is extremely important. How many, hello?
So I'm listening to you, Kevin.
How many young Barbadians you know? And I'd like to listen to you because...
Plenty. So plenty, because here's the thing, and this is the challenge that I have, right? I think there's a disconnect between a segment of the population and perhaps those of my era who believe still that, as I said to you, a business is brick and mortar, and that you have to have a sign at the door. I know young people who are involved in video productions who very much protect their intellectual property. I know people involved in the creation of music who protect their property. They travel, some of them virtual, some of them actual, and they do work for people all over the place. They sit here and write jingles, they do graphic arts, and they're protected. They're people who do photography. They're young people in Barbados who understand how to work their business. The problem is you don't see them at a mall with a shop with a sign hanging outside. What has happened over a period of time is the way businesses in Barbados operate has changed. Who are the people who rent beach chairs, who rent umbrellas, who have jet skis? Who are the people behind some of the rent-a-car businesses? I'm not talking about those at Courtesy Garage and the other big names that we know. I am talking about the people who have drive around Barbados and you see their cars with little stickers on the back with the various names of their businesses. They're owned sometimes by ordinary people. I use the word ordinary in inverted commas. They advertise online. You don't see them advertising in the newspaper. Certainly not on radio, but they get business. There are places in Barbados that rent out to visitors on a year-round basis who you and I may have no idea who they are, what they look like, because they operate from behind a business. There are lawyers in Barbados who make more money off of people who don't live in Barbados than people who live in Barbados. So the point I'm making is they got businesses here that you and I ain't know nothing about. I'm talking about the legitimate ones, eh? I ain't talking about the others yet. Yes, sir.
Mr. Johnson, mm-hmm. One of the important things you have just played for me was the fact that there's several businesses in Barbados who people don't know that they're registered.
Correct.
And there are also hundreds of other businesses in Barbados that are not registered.
Aha. That too I agree with, sir. And there are people who don't know what you were talking about protecting their
If we need to move this country forward, in this period of time. As I am stressing the fact that we're back between 47 and 67, the black franchise, the economic franchise was strong. We have seen a situation where there's a break now in the year 2020, where we've got to almost start all over again. And the great-grandchildren of these people are the ones that who are now moving forward. So I congratulate all of those who have taken the path of getting intellectual property, getting registered. But I'm also of the opinion that one of the things that we have got to teach our children is the importance of insurance.
Okay, sir.
Is that the hold on? Imagine, watch this.
I ain't holding on, sir, because I got to go to the news, which is why I said, all right. Sir, I got you. Made the point. Good hearing from you. We'll talk about this some more. 434-1-790-266-4862. Rastax@starcomnetwork.net. That's the way you can reach us. We were told that there was going to be a media conference at 12:30. So asking Stetson if we have anything on that. He's going to check and hopefully we'll be able to bring you that if and when we get it. Just following on from the discussion I had with the last caller before the break, I think it is important that we understand the new way of doing business. I think it is also, I support him on the call that you register your business, you organize your business as though it is a business. Said numerous times when hosting the Fireworks program that sometimes people don't understand the business side of the business. That does not mean that they're in the majority. There may be a few who still don't, but I support him on the call that you register your business, you organize your business as though it is a business. Said numerous times when hosting the Fireworks program that sometimes people don't understand the business side of the business. That does not mean that they're in the majority. There may be a few who still don't, but there are others who've understood the business and they make it work for them. Some of them work outside of Barbados. I could think of Bagina Kenty, who's been out of Barbados for quite a while. And there are others who've done the same thing. They've traveled, they've worked. The gentleman I spoke to on the cruise lines, there are people who work on cruise ships almost on a year-round basis. They too are part of this entertainment industry. Someone sent a message earlier about in response to the caller who made mention of draftsmen and architects and pointed out that the law, they referred to it, that said registered architects. And I said, that's the key. I got to see what it says about who's registered, because it's a matter of ensuring that the people are, I guess, supposed certified to do what they say they can do. To protect both the client and the person providing the service. Sometimes there are people who run away from certification and from registration because they feel it's an impediment, but it's to provide some level of support for both the buyer and the seller. It's the way business is done today. 434-1-790. Brass Tacks, good afternoon. Hello. 434-1-790. See if I can get you in. I got a message from someone who was saying they couldn't hold on anymore, so they're going to send a WhatsApp message. Haven't seen that yet, but the lines are there. And usually after the news, there's that nice lull as people take their breaks and then come back. Brassax, good afternoon. Okay, so we're down to the last one. Hello.
Hey, good afternoon.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Mr. Johnson. How are you?
I'm not bad. How are you?
Yeah, good. Glad to talk to you today.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was listening to the program, and they were talking about black people at work and the other set of people. But I think the problem that we black people have is that we talk too much. I think we should work the brain and keep the mouth shut. No, remember.
Why?
Yeah.
Or Mo just gets in trouble?
Yeah.
With whom?
No, I remember back in 1972, when he was in Japan. We had some Indians over there. We had some guys from Africa, Kampala. We had guys from all over the world studying. And one of the Indians asked me, how do Indians get along in your country? I said, well, a lot of them actually are mostly involved in business, like selling things and so forth. Mm-hmm. So he said to me, back in India, I won't use the exact word, but you know how coming. We doing whatever, but we want it. You understand me carefully?
Mm-hmm.
And they don't look at the one letter. They may not do the one letter. They're poor like anybody else.
So, but you know, when you're in the minority, you tend to gather around those that you know. Because when Bajans go to London back in the 1960s, Jamaicans, Grenadians, St. Lucians, all of them were West Indians, so they gather up together.
Right.
Have their cook up together, their parties together. It's only when they get back home they return to their individual nationalities.
Right.
But minority, man, you hook up with who you know and you stick close to.
Right. So we got to get it right. And the problem here is, like, for example, you will find that most of our children, if you ask them what they want to do when they left school, they can't tell you.
True.
They don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this may be a lack of exposure. Maybe they don't have the parents to talk to them and push them in the right direction. I remember Johnson back in the 60s. I was working for work. I think my first paycheck was $8 a week. $8 a week. And I did, out of that $8 a week, I did a course in radio, television, electronic, and telecommunication from the National Technical School in Los Angeles, California.
Okay.
And that course cost me $5 a month. $5 a month.
Whoa. You brush up on that since then, man?
Huh?
You brushed up on it since then? Or you still remember from all then?
Well, I used to always involved in electronics and so forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
But since then, I went overseas and I studied biomedical equipment and, you know, other type of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But all I'm saying is that the young people don't got no ideas of what they want to do.
Because sometimes they're not asked. Sometimes they're told. Let me give you a personal experience, huh?
Yeah.
And it opened my eyes to a lot of things. My son, the youngest of my children, liked playing with video games.
Yeah.
And it annoyed me because he seemed to be always playing with video games. My daughter didn't. My other daughter didn't. She liked puzzles, but he liked video games.
Yeah.
And it annoyed me.
Yeah.
And one day I said, I'm going to throw this thing out the window, right? Mm-hmm. Because they got children your age that designing programs while you sitting down there playing.
Right.
He got up, he went upstairs, he came down with an exercise book, and he gave it to me.
Mm-hmm.
I opened the exercise book. I had no idea what was in it. It just had a lot of numbers and letters, and it looked like stupidness to me. So I asked him, what is this foolishness? He told me, this is snakes and ladders in code for a computer. This is every single board game that you upstairs was coded. I said, you did this? Yes. I said, this is what you want to do?
Yeah.
He said, yes. I said, so why you tell me that? So where's the money? Sit down and show me what you do. And the guy sat there and explained to me. I realized, okay, he ain't really playing. He's serious. Now he's in Canada now doing computer software development, having already done accounts and econ. But I had to ask him because up till then, I thought he just playing the fool. So sometimes we don't ask our children.
Yeah.
We assume or we tell them do things. Let me just take a break here. The press conference has started with the Minister of Health. So we'll join it now for an update. Thank you, Stetson, and thank you, Michelle.
There were among a total of 187 people tested yesterday. One result is pending. And all of the others were negative for the virus, but remain in quarantine. Meanwhile, I am happy to announce that two of the four people who remained in isolation up to yesterday are going home today after they were declared free of the virus. The four new cases bring the number now in isolation to six, and our tally of confirmed cases since March 16th 296. Additionally, 83 people have recovered. Yesterday's positive results for COVID-19 came after a 17-day hiatus since the last positive case on May 22nd. While this result is of concern to us, I must say that the results themselves were not unexpected and have not alarmed us. The public health officers in this ministry were fully aware and have been advising the government that we should be prepared for an uptick in cases once travel from hotbed areas resume. I wish to assure the public that Barbados is much better prepared today to deal with this challenge than we were in March when the viral illness surfaced here on island. We certainly have more capacity and experience than we had at the beginning. I have continually cautioned residents of Barbados that this public health threat is not over. The bulk of our cases have been imported cases comprising mainly Barbadians. And with the lockdown, we have been able to contain the spread. But the fact of the matter is that once we open up, and we have to eventually open up, the possibility is that cases will return. The good news is that our systems are now enhanced. For example, at the ports of entry, we no longer have to rely on the handheld thermometers to check temperatures, but instead, we have installed the thermal testers that will make it so much easier for persons to be facilitated. We have a more than adequate supply of testing kits so that we are now able to test everyone arriving into the island, as well as to continue testing anyone who is recommended to be tested or who wishes to be tested in Barbados. I wish to take this opportunity to commend the officers at the Best Dos Santos Public Health Laboratory, who have now completed more than 6,000 tests for COVID-19, which is a significant achievement for a small island state such as ours. From the beginning, we have understood what is required and will continue to do all in our power to identify, isolate, treat, contact trace, and contain the spread of COVID-19 in Barbados. We all accept that it will be around for a long time, or at least until a vaccine is developed. But we are also determined that we will not be paralyzed by the presence of this virus. We must never retreat or surrender, but we must learn to live with the knowledge that this virus is around us. As a country, we must act responsibly by following all the protocols and public health advice. An important objective of this ministry is to continue to educate you about this disease and provide you with all the tools necessary to safeguard the health of this nation. I am extremely proud of the way that Barbadians have responded so far, and I urge you all not to relax your efforts. Proper hand hygiene and maintaining physical distance still remain two of the most effective methods of staying safe. Finally, be your brother's keeper. There will always be the vulnerable among us who need our help and our support. Continue to look out for one another and lift our country up in your prayers. That is the end of my statement, and I have with me Dr. Corey Ford, who you know very well, Dr. Arthur Phillips, and we'll be happy to entertain any questions that you may have.
Minister, given this development, is government still willing to repatriate others from the U.S. anything soon?
This development has, for us, has nothing to do with the repatriation of Barbadians to this country. We acknowledge that persons who were born here and who reside here have a right to be here. And it is the desire of the government to continue to facilitate the arrival of Barbadians. So it's not an issue at all, and let me assure the country that it is not. Yes, we will always continue to welcome Barbadians here, and as long as we have the capacity, we will more than welcome Barbadians back home. And let me put it a little better for you. If there were Barbadians who are brought and who reported that they were COVID patients, we would not turn them back as long as we have the capacity, because that is a duty and a responsibility for us to look after our people. And we have more than enough capacity at this point in time to be able to do so. And all Barbadians can continue to expect that we will be accepting persons returning home.
Those who tested positive, were they related in any way?
I don't have those details at this point in time. I wouldn't be able to say. Because I normally don't even know the names of the persons who were tested positive.
How large was the flight that came in? How many persons on the flight?
The flight had 110 persons on board, and we tested all 110.
Right, but what about possible exposure while on the flight? I mean, is that a consideration of being factored in?
Well, as you, I'm sure you can appreciate that on all flights, and there are protocols of which the airlines have established, and we can only deal with what arrives here in Barbados. And from the time people arrive, we also then institute all of our protocols. And that is why, out of caution, that we made the decision that we will place all persons in mandatory quarantine, so that if in the event that we discover that there are confirmed cases as we have now, it is easier to control and to manage, and we don't have a difficulty with this. This is just going to be what is going to happen going forward.
Those who tested positive, what's the severity of their infection?
Based on what the lab has indicated, and based on the viral burning, that I think that is what is called, I will allow Dr. Phillips to amplify here a bit, but it can tell you that what we are seeing there, certainly the persons are asymptomatic, which should suggest something to you. And that is why, for example, when they arrive at the airport and they were screened, that it would not have been picked up by mere screening alone. So, but Dr. Phillips would be able to give you some greater details. This is
Yes, just to elaborate on what Minister would have said, the persons who have tested positive were all asymptomatic. No persons had any symptoms. So there's no issue in terms of severity of illness. It is that we've picked up the illness on the swabbing. The lab has picked it up, but it isn't that they presented with illness. And this emphasizes the importance of our measures of screening everyone who comes in, swabbing everyone who comes in. And that's the operation that was mounted at the airport yesterday, where everyone who came in was swabbed before they left the airport. Yeah. So we're not just relying on whether individuals are ill or whether they report having been in contact with someone who was ill. Yeah.
Mr. Minister, this is just repatriated.
Just put everything on the sheet.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Minister. Yeah, we are seeing what is possible with persons just from a smaller flight being repatriated. What does this say for possibilities for a wider opening of the country? Again, put this in the context of expectations of greater spread in the U.S. with these riots and marches going on, and persons being in closer proximity to each other. What are now our prospects for eventually getting back to some sense of free flowing fluidity for flights, etc., from a tourism prospect?
Well, that is a question that the Honorable Prime Minister will address when she speaks to the country, and that is something that's beyond the realm of the Ministry of Health at this point in time. But what I can say to you from a health perspective is that we anticipate, and we follow what is happening overseas, but we do anticipate that we will have some additional cases going forward, that because this is something that we now have to live with. So that does not, that is not an issue for us in terms, we are not afraid of that. What we are seeking to do is to be able to manage whatever comes our way and to be able to determine when a situation is becoming unmanageable.
But just to get you correct, when you say you're not afraid of that, you're not afraid, you're saying that in terms of your capabilities to manage, the ministry has the capability to manage a wider scale opening of the borders?
The ministry always had the capability to manage wide-scale opening because we were accepting flights all the time. You would appreciate that we have always been accepting flights. International flights cease, but we were accepting flights here in Barbados. We were accepting cruise ships. And what I was saying earlier in the statement that I made is that during that process, in the initial stages, we were nowhere as prepared as we are today, especially in terms of having equipment, supplies, and facilities. You would appreciate, for example, that there was no Harrison Point when we had our first case. It was not ready. We had to do some other things in order to provide capacity. But there is a Harrison Point, for example. We didn't have enough ventilators. We do. We didn't have enough testing kits. None of the countries did. We do now. And we have the experience of having dealt over the last few months with 92 cases, confirmed cases, and we have tested over 6,000 persons. So we have a very good handle on things at the moment, and we understand that the country has to reopen.
And in terms of, I mean, I know that you did the testing on the ground as soon as they landed, etc. But we saw, based on what I've been seeing, some interaction to some extent from the media. We saw frontline workers, etc. What were the risk factors in terms of exposure to those frontline persons at the airport and those media persons at the tarmac taking photos, etc.?
But you're not going to contract a media doctor to speak. I think what you're asking me is so easy to answer that I will probably do it myself. But you're not going to get the virus from taking photos, and the media persons who are at the airport were not interacting with people. Frontline workers, yes, had those who had to interacted, but following the protocols that we've established, including the use of PPE and everything else that goes with that. So we have frontline workers who actually work in the isolation facility, like Dr. Ford. So there's a way of doing it. Okay.
So in this instance, frontline workers at the airport have to be tested.
Sorry?
Yesterday, none of them would have had to be tested. Any exposure, anything?
Short
answer, no.
No.
Mr. Bostic, if we may switch gears really quickly, we are getting reports in real time of a situation on a cruise ship where there's a suspected suicide on that cruise ship. Person of the cruise ship out there in isolation, etc. I know that the facts are still coming to the fore, and there can be no speculation at this time, but it still does throw into sharp relief our own handling of mental health concerns for persons, again, with extended stay in isolation, persons with these social distancing requirements and being social animals. What plans are in place to tackle the potential mental health fallout that we can be facing at this moment?
I will allow Dr. Phillips to respond to you, but I will just say to you that we offer a very comprehensive response to COVID and to all other things, which includes all aspects of healthcare, as Dr. Phillips will outline.
Yes, just to indicate that Mental health is part of the COVID response, and we would have identified mental health issues for the general public in terms of the lockdown, mental health issues for healthcare staff who are involved in the response, as well as mental health issues for individuals who may have to be in quarantine, and particularly those who have to be in isolation. And there are mechanisms in place for individuals to be referred, including through the hotline for the general public, as well as mechanisms for those who may be in isolation. Dr. Ford can speak more to that. For them to receive an appropriate assessment and intervention as needed. And one of the good things about where we are in terms of available technology is that a lot of this has been able to be done remotely. So there's group counseling as well as individual counseling, support for families, etc., available through our mental health services. So this is something that before we had a demand for it, was anticipated and planned for, and is being delivered as we speak. Yeah.
I think Dr. Ford wants to make an intervention.
And why is that? Could you also say that maybe there might be a possibility of maybe extending some of those services to those persons from once out there on those cruise ships as well?
I'll let the minister address that. Yes. So the Harshest Point facility and all isolation facilities in country, we offer a level of support in terms of psychological support. And it's a very rigid camp type program, both for patients and for our staff. With regards to patients, all patients at entry to the facility, admission to the facility, are offered that level of psychological support. And if anything develops during the course of their stay at the facility, then that's facilitated. And that can be facilitated remotely, and it has been facilitated remotely for some of our patients there thus far, and with continual follow-up either by the psychologist or the psychiatrist. When those patients are discharged as mandatory, we offer that level of support in terms of the psychological aspect as well. And we provide a patient with a number that they can call directly so they can get that support. I think outside of that, it's also important that we support our staff on the ground who can become burned out, who would have challenges. Obviously, people have died in the process of the outbreak, and they're accustomed seeing people ill as well. They have to go home to their families. Those sort of challenges we recognize very early as part of developing the program of management of these patients. We have offered that level of support, so the psychiatrist is directly involved. We have a group support system which we initiated with the psychologist. We all have to do it, including myself. And if it's required on an individual basis, that level of support is provided. And we also provide that support by the psychiatrist on an individual-to-individual basis. So this is something we continue to monitor very closely on our staff at these facilities. As you would imagine, there can be challenges with that.
To answer your second question, cruise ships have made requests of Barbados for medical assistance, humanitarian assistance as well. And we have been able to facilitate those requests. So if there was a request for that psychological support, I'm sure that we would be able to facilitate that request. But so far, we've not had any requests.
You've been listening to a press briefing given by the Minister of Health, as well as health officials, on the status of persons who traveled to Barbados on one of the flights coming in. We have four new COVID cases. The two released from isolation for the original four that were there, and now the number in isolation, six. And we took as well a few questions from the press to the minister. We continue until 2 on this, the Wednesday edition of Dr. Brass Tacks, 4341790. You can send a WhatsApp message to 266-4862, or you can send an email to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net.